The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
President Biden is claiming a major victory after making a compromise deal on infrastructure with senators from both parties, but it only includes a portion of the president's original infrastructure plan. Both sides still have problems with the deal.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It's great to be here with you today. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for joining us. That was CBS News reporting that we may finally have an infrastructure bill we're talking about and taking a look at. I'm going to fill you in on some of the specifics in just a moment, but I want to welcome you to the broadcast. Hey, I've got a lot to get into with you today, and I want to share with you two really powerful answered prayers, and they happened to me today. Coming up after the chaplet, we'll pray that in about an hour. I just want to share with you a chaplet miracle. I really believe this was an incredible chaplet miracle. I'll fill you in on that. And a prayer that I've asked you to pray for. It wasn't a big one, but it was answered in a pretty dramatic way. So the prayer works, man. It changes things. It's powerful. We see it. I believe in it. And maybe God gives me these opportunities to experience it so I can speak with such authority about it to you, because I have very little doubt in the fact that when we pray, things change. They really do. When we pray, things change. Some news. Let's get into that first. Couple things from the Florida governor to the Biden administration to your Subway sandwich. We got a lot to share with you. President Biden has come out. I don't know if you saw the news yesterday. He claimed a major victory, struck a $579 billion infrastructure bill, or deal, I should say, with a group of 10 bipartisan senators. The compromise only covers a portion of what the president was hoping for. Some say it faces a difficult road getting past the Congress, but there is some hope out there. For more on this, let CBS fill you in on all the details.
I'm a true bipartisan effort.
President Biden on a victory lap after striking a bipartisan infrastructure deal. For a $579 billion plan that would invest in things like transportation, water projects, and broadband internet. Congress would pay for it in part by boosting the IRS's budget to go after tax cheats, diverting billions in unused COVID relief funds, and by selling some of the nation's strategic oil reserve. That second package is a significantly larger and more expensive plan that includes so-called human infrastructure, like childcare, green energy projects, and social programs, and has no Republican support. Democrats would have to pass that bill through reconciliation, a process that only requires a simple majority vote.
There won't be an infrastructure bill unless we have a reconciliation bill.
If only one comes to me, if this is the only thing that comes to me, I'm not signing it.
It almost makes your head spin. An expression of bipartisanship and then an ultimatum on behalf of your left-wing base.
But the president said he's confident more Republicans and Democrats will sign on to the bipartisan proposal.
We'll stick to the deal.
You know, a lot of progressives do not like this deal. You heard Nancy Pelosi. You heard a lot of other people. I go back to a very simple definition. You know how I feel about words and how the culture, and in particular, really the Democrat Party, they've redefined words. We talk about everything from reproductive justice, right, to the pro-choice, like words that have been used for you know, years now, to words like infrastructure. I mean, all of a sudden, we're redefining words to mean something that they're not intended to be. And a lot of the progressives, the Democrats don't want this because they want infrastructure to mean something other than fixing your roads and your bridges, right? Your dams and all the other infrastructure-related issues that we have. And they make this argument that infrastructure means more. Let's have an infrastructure bill. And then you want to pass those other things? You want funding for those? Present them. Let's get it through Congress, okay? Let's debate those. Let's look at the merits of those things. So we'll see what happens with infrastructure. I think it's going to be a battle the next couple of years here. No doubt about it. No doubt at all about it. Really shows you that, they want government to influence, control, and be part of every aspect of life. Another issue coming out of Florida, and you can sound off on this one. I'm not sure how you feel about this. The Florida governor signed a law that requires students and faculty to have their beliefs surveyed. And I'll throw to another little piece here to fill you in, but the Florida governor signed the legislation that's going to require public colleges, okay, public colleges and universities to take an annual survey of both their students and their staff about what they believe, about their viewpoints. Why? Well, he claims he wants to support intellectual diversity. You know, he also kind of hinted, we'll see what happens here, at the fact that the schools could face financial penalties depending on the survey's results. I'm thinking, what's that mean, right? But it's House Bill 233. Governor DeSantis signed it on Tuesday, and he makes the case that, look, it's simple. He wants to ensure that students are presented diverse ideas and opinions, including those that they may disagree with or find uncomfortable. And I think it may be a good thing. I don't think the survey can hurt, because I do think our institutions of higher learning have become very biased, very partisan, and they promote and indoctrinate a particular ideology. And I think this will be good for the country, and I think it'll be good for students as well. I think diversity is good. Limiting only one ideology, and that's, you fundamentally get that, I think can be problematic. But, you know, Changing America will explain more about what Governor DeSantis has in mind, what he's thinking about in terms of the survey, and you can always let me know whether or not you think it's a good idea. Check this out.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Tuesday signed legislation mandating public colleges and universities survey students and faculty about their beliefs in an effort to promote intellectual diversity on campuses. Under House Bill 233, surveys would be conducted annually on campuses to assess viewpoint diversity and intellectual freedom, and determine, quote, the extent to which competing ideas and perspectives are presented, and whether students and faculty, quote, feel free to express beliefs and viewpoints on campus and in the classroom, end quote. The bill does not specifically say what will be done with survey results, but DeSantis suggested budget cuts could be imminent if universities and colleges are found to be indoctrinating students. The legislation, which goes into effect July 1st, also aims to ensure students are being shown ideas that they, quote, may disagree with or find uncomfortable, end quote.
Yeah, you know, as I hear these pieces and I see, I've got great concerns about our universities and our colleges in our country, because there's really a lack of tolerance. You know, everybody proclaims this is my truth and that's your truth and we're entitled to our own truth, which is really just relativism, you know, incarnate. It's really quite ridiculous. And Jake, you and I were talking about that before the show. Was what DeSantis is doing, I don't think it threatens anybody. I think it may be a good idea.
I think it's a really good idea, Drew, because one thing that makes me scratch my head a little bit is that when you see progressives on the left, one of their mantras is, you know, I have my truth, you have your truth, let's all live in this subjective world of relativism. But then when it comes to the ability to express the one truth, the objective truth, you know, the Christian Judeo truth, that they have none of that. And they say, no, we have to make sure that that truth is not proclaimed in the public square. So really, it kind of just shows, I make the point again, that sometimes progressivism is sort of like the most conservative ideology that there is, because like there's no openness to that. I just really think that like they really are trying to suppress objectivism, and it's what Pope Benedict has always said, that we live in this relativism, the dictatorship of relativism, and that's what we're seeing really playing out in the world. Another really cool thing, Drew, that Governor DeSantis has done, of course, and you've mentioned this, is that he has signed that bill requiring a moment of silence in schools. Remember talking about that?
Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So like, you know, we're seeing this ban of prayer in public school, but here's what Governor DeSantis has said. He's coming back out and saying, no, I'm going to sign a bill that requires kids in school to actually take time to pray and take time to have silence. Here's what he said.
So I want to thank the folks here today who helped with these two bills. You know, HB 529, the moment of silence in public schools. We had this a lot of schools do have it, but not all of them do. But we think it's something that's important to be able to provide each student the ability at every day to be able to reflect and to be able to pray as they see fit. The idea that you can just push God out of every institution and be successful, I'm sorry, our founding fathers did not believe that. And so So we have an opportunity here to really protect the religious freedom of everybody who's going to school K through 12 in the state of Florida. And we're really proud of that.
Yeah, the other thing about DeSantis I like too, I mean, he, of course, the governor of Florida, he recognizes the real problem with socialism and communism. I saw a piece with him not too long ago where he took time to really bash that. And there are some people who said, man, he would make a great president. You know, it would be great if he ran.
You think he's going to, Drew?
You know, Jake, I don't know. Here's the thing. I thought I heard he wasn't. There is some evidence, though, that he's getting ready for a presidential run. He doesn't like the 1619 project. I mean, he says really all the right things. He's on it. You know, would Trump run again? Would he be the vice president? Would he run against Trump? Is Trump one and done? That's really a key here. So I don't know. I don't know what DeSantis is going to do. I really don't know whether he's going to run or not.
I'm convinced, Drew. I'm convinced that President or former President Trump is going to throw his hat in the ring again, then bring in DeSantis as vice president. That's what I'm betting my money on. But I guess we'll see.
Well, you know, if he was to run, this is, you know, when it comes to good politics, good politicians and successful ones, the timing is everything in that
right.
line of work.
Right.
And DeSantis knows, like, this is his moment. He's getting a lot of good press. He's using the power of his office to rack up more credibility, even amongst the most rabid members of the Trump base. So who knows? I mean, a lot depends on Donald Trump, whether he's going to run. You know, will Trump run again? If he decides to run again, all of DeSantis' posturing may not matter. But maybe it'd be a tough decision for some people, though, because I know you said you would probably rather vote for DeSantis than you would Donald Trump.
You're putting me on the spot, Drew. No, I love what DeSantis and I love what he's doing. I think he is really able to get the truth out in a way that's very diplomatic, but yet he doesn't hold back. He's not like cowering to the left. I love what Trump stood for. I love the policies he stood for, but I think DeSantis is bringing something to the table that's really new and fresh. So we'll see. I have no idea.
My take on this is what I had read a little while ago. I was wondering where he stood on the issue. Those close to him, those in a circle, were saying, look, he's not going to press the go button on a 2024 bid for president until he hears from Trump. But he is laying the groundwork right now. Mm-hmm. And I guess a lot depends on whether or not Trump's going to run again. I don't know where people are on the whole Trump thing, whether or not they want him back in office. I mean, you have to look at his policies, what he did with China, what he did in terms of life in this country.
He did so much.
What he did with prayer. I mean, there was a lot. So, mm-hmm. I mean, Trump was his greatest enemy. I mean, he shot himself in his foot. He was bombastic. The things he said, I think he made some bad moves in terms of his campaign. But I don't know. Maybe people, they want something different for 2024. Joe Biden was asked if he was going to run again. He said, yes, he is going to run again. So we'll see who's going to go up against him in the days ahead. So we'll see. You know, today is also a day in which you may not know the anniversary. It's the 59th anniversary of the ban on school prayer. We were talking about Donald Trump and, of course, his strong support of prayer and prayer in school and life. It was on this day about 59 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court first ruled that government-endorsed prayer in public schools was unconstitutional. And that was a landmark decision to really lay at the center of the nation's debate over the separation of church and state. And we hear that a lot. A lot of people bring that up. But it did change the way that faith and religion are handled in the schools. And I think we are seeing that play out also in the culture at large. When you remove God from the classroom, when you remove prayer from school, when you strip God from the public square in general, the problems ensue. In 1962, the Supreme Court heard a case that was riling the American public school system at the time. It was Engel versus Vitale. It was a case from New York State where some people were suing the state because they thought that mandated prayer, you know, that students began the day with was unconstitutional. And I'll share the prayer that was being read. Here's the initial prayer. Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon thee, and we beg your blessing upon us, our parents, our teachers, and in our country. Amen. And that was read in schools every morning. Well, the New York Court of Appeals had held the constitutionality, they upheld the constitutionality of that prayer, but it was appealed to the Supreme Court, and it was ruled 6-1 against. And the decision then has led to a number of other decisions, right? We see now how it has limited the ability of people in public schools to just pray in public, right? You can't even pray in public. You can't do that at a football game, right? You see what's happening in our schools. Back in 85, there was another Supreme Court case. It was Wallace versus Jaffery, and it was it ruled that Alabama's law permitting the 1 minute, you know, for prayer or meditation, that was unconstitutional. You fast forward, you know, 7 years later, 1992, another case that prohibited clergy-led prayer at middle school graduation ceremonies. And then, of course, in turn, there was another case that just banned, you know, that extended the ban to school-organized student-led prayer. You couldn't pray at a high school football game. So you see the slippery slope of what happened 59 years ago. So the Trump administration, when Donald Trump was in office, he issued guidance on prayer in school. And that guidance, according to the White House Domestic Policy Council at the time, basically said, look, we remind school districts of the rights of students, of parents and teachers, you know, and they should be empowered to confidently know and exercise their right. And that was because students and teachers had been punished for doing things like reading the Bible or talking about Jesus. You couldn't even talk about Jesus with your peers. Oh, you can't do that in school. Can't do that by the locker. You can't do that by the water cooler, right? Yeah, or just praying together voluntarily after school. So this was an issue, and it's one that, of course, you see the bad fruit of. But it's the anniversary of that today, and I just thought, you know, it's something important for us to reflect upon. Jake, did you have audio on that, you said?
Well, we already ran that. That was DeSantis talking about the moment of silence. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it shows that, again, he's fighting against that. So
no, and it's good because, you know, Donald Trump was too. I guess I went off on the tangent because I was remembering, you know, Trump, what he did on that as well. One other thing here, just in terms of politics, Trump, DeSantis, polls, all the rest of that. I'm not here to throw stones at the media. I'm in the media. I think media is important for the country. It should be the watchdog of the government. I think it should be fair. I think it should be balanced. I think it should not be a propaganda arm of certain political parties. And I think that is something that we are seeing very much today. So there was a survey that was done, and it was commissioned by the Reuters Institute for the study of journalism. And they found that the U.S. has the lowest public levels of trust in the media out of 46 countries that were surveyed. Look, we're the land of the free, right? We have the First Amendment, right? We have freedom of press, freedom of speech. And yet the U.S. has the lowest levels of public trust in the media amongst 46 countries that have been surveyed. They surveyed thousands, tens of thousands, and they basically found that 29% of those in the U.S. said that they could trust, you know, most news, just a third, one out of three. You know, 65% had a great distrust of it. So there was a panel discussion about distrust in the media on Wyoming PBS, and this brave member of the audience confronted the panel, and I love that when people do that. It takes courage to stand up and in front of a panel, in front of a bunch of other people, and to voice your opinion. So BuzzFeed, I think Washington Post, they were members of, Jake, they were both members of the panel, right?
There was a panel member from Washington Post, BuzzFeed, and others. Yeah.
So and this person voiced their frustration with their reporting. I don't know if I'd have the courage to do that. I hope I would. I'd like to get up there and tell people what I think, so I probably would. But listen to this.
Journalists rank just ahead of car salesmen and Congress. And I think until the media and journalists and hard news recognize they have an issue, they have a problem, it's never going to be corrected. And if the media, hard news journalists, don't recognize they have a problem, the 32% is going to continue to go down. I know the difference between opinion. I know the difference between hard news. And so we've spent the last 5 months demonstrating hard news bias. So I don't want to waste.
Well, could you maybe give us an example of what you mean?
Hard news is an AP article in the paper. I mean,
but of bias. What are you talking about when you talk about liberal bias?
So you don't understand what liberal bias is.
I want to understand what you mean.
Well, it could either be how something's reported, an angle, but mostly opinion written by journalists. So instead of journalists writing facts and describing the facts and the news story, they interject their opinions in the article. So it's supposed to be hard news, but what comes out is opinion. So as an example, say an article that refers to that support abortion to be somebody that opposes abortion, they're anti, they have an anti-agenda against abortion. It's just the way you present something. That's just a small example. But again, I don't want to take all of these, everyone's time and going through it, because I provided, 15, 20 different hard news articles that showed liberal bias in reporting. And I think it's even further than that. I think it's really not what you report, it's what you don't report. It's when the stories are positive towards conservative ideas, they get buried or they get ignored.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? I don't know how you feel about media. I received an email from a listener. Actually, I was at an event last Thursday, and a lot of people came up to me and said, I can't watch the media anymore. It's so frustrating to me. I can't watch it. It disturbs my spirit, the person said. And several people said, I get my news media from Relevant Radio. I get it from you, and I get it from Relevant Radio. And I think that's a real compliment. I mean, it's a tremendous charge that we've been given, and hopefully we will respect and honor and fulfill that duty. I try to give you a look at the biggest news stories of the day, and I try to do it through the prism of our Catholic faith, with rationality, with intelligence, right? That's the way we should do this, not with bias, not with partisanship, not with a specific ideology or agenda that we're trying to push. And I think that's really important. So pray for us. If you come across important news stories or something that you want covered, email our show. It's drew@relevantradio.com. Just say, hey, Drew, here's a great story. You should cover it. And we see those every day. I'd love it. I get news links from a lot of people. Yesterday, we actually received an email from a listener about cannabis and how the use of cannabis, or finally did a study, increases the rate of suicide in youth. Suicidality has on the increase, and they found this correlation to it. I didn't see that story anywhere other than this listener who sent it over. And because of that, boom, we were able to give you coverage. So feel free to do that. Hey, one other story here very quickly, and I just got a lot to share with you today. Is Lucas with us today, Jake? I don't know if
yeah, Lucas is here.
So Lucas is there. Lucas is the producer of the Cale Clark Show. He does a great job for that. He helps out with Timmery. And Lucas is actually leaving our Green Bay studio. He's now going to be going to our Chicago studio. So I took him to lunch yesterday. And Jake and Patrick and Lucas and I were all out. And I learned a little bit about him. When he was in high school, he told me he worked at Subway, right? And I said to him, here's a little Subway fact for you. There are more Subway stores globally than there are McDonald's. And I would have bet my house there are more McDonald's than there are Subways, right? But no, Subway's like the number one franchise, I think, in the world right now. But I saw a disturbing story. So Jake and Patrick, Lucas, I want your take on this. I saw a story that Subway's tuna sandwich, they did this study. They looked at it. New York Times, they took its 60 inches of Subway tuna. They tested it at a lab. And they found no tuna DNA present. And I'm like, no way.
Shocker.
What am I eating?
Shocker there. That's a big shocker, Drew.
ABC 7 in LA. They'll give you the lowdown on this fishy story.
If you like tuna sandwiches from Subway, a New York Times lab test found no tuna DNA in any of the sandwiches that it tested. Samples of tuna were actually picked up from three different Subway locations right here in Los Angeles. And the lab test did show that no tuna DNA was present. Now, the lab says the tuna was either so heavily processed that tuna DNA wasn't identifiable or that no tuna was actually used. Subway, though, insists it does use the skipjack and yellowfin tuna and that there's simply no truth to these allegations.
Whew, I feel better. Lucas, before we go to break, and I know I got to go there right now, what was the number one selling sandwich while you were at Subway? Is it tuna? People
honestly,
love that?
Honestly, people love tuna. It was probably one of the most popular
really?
Ones. Yeah.
I'm surprised about that.
Yeah.
You know, I used to eat tuna hoagies all the time. There's a place in the East Coast where I lived. They had these Wawas, right? A Wawa hoagie, right?
Oh,
I'd get a tuna hoagie until I found out how many calories are in a tuna hoagie.
Well, and
I thought,
they put so much mayonnaise in them. That's the killer.
That is the problem.
It's like the best part of it, though.
It really is. All right, well, I'll tell you, I have to take a short break. Come back. We'll talk more. There's a huge event happening that if you can get to, it could change your life, maybe even your health. I'll tell you about it when we come back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
One day, people will love each other. I am fighting for that.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
That was, I don't know if you can make that out. That was Father Ubald. He said, someday people will love each other. I am fighting for that. This is a man who I believe is a saint. And, you know, I often turn to the saints, to the blesseds, to the venerables. I think one day Father Ubald will become a servant of God and make his way to sanctity. He was a priest from Rwanda who back on January 7th was called home to God. He died from complications due to COVID-19. I know him personally, and I know you knew him too because he was on this radio program many times. In fact, he prayed the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us on the air. I can't tell you how many times. He was an extraordinary man. He was. He was a man filled with sanctity. He was a man who exemplified heroic virtue. And like so many others who survived the Holocaust or the terrible civil war that we saw erupt in Rwanda, Africa in the early 1990s, he had a special grace. He lost more than 80 family members and 45,000 parishioners in that horrific war. And if you're not familiar with the story, let me just give you a quick thumbnail on him. And I want to get you plugged into something that's connected to him that might result in a profound change in your life, your emotions, maybe even in your health. If you want a little history, back in 1981, the Mother of God appears in a little tiny landlocked country called Rwanda. I went there in 89 with a film crew, and I was present for the very last apparition of the Blessed Mother. She appeared in this little school to the seer. And it was one of the most profound experiences of my life. And the people of Rwanda were loving. These Tutsis were incredible people. And as I dove in as a documentarian to the story of the apparitions, there was a haunting aspect of the message that I actually did not include in one of the documentaries I did. They talked about seers one day in 1982 were given a vision of a horrifying future for the country. They saw rivers floating with bodies. They saw corpses with no heads. They saw blood running down the aisles of churches. They saw things that were unimaginable. It was apocalyptic. And you know what? I thought, that really can't be true. I'm a little hesitant about that. I don't want to put that in this documentary. And to my chagrin, my great regret, I did not do it. I stayed away from it. I talked about the message of conversion and Our Lady's call for us to purity and all the events that surrounded this. And I focused on what was unfolding there. But true to the prophecy, this was 82, 1994, a bloody civil war erupts. And Rwanda, there's a complex ethnic interchange that goes on in that country. And there was tremendous ethnic division in Rwanda between a group called the Hutus and the Tutsis, who were Christian. And this tribal polarization exploded after the president's plane was shot down. And it went on for a period of, I think it was about 100 days. And they estimate that 800,000, probably over that, probably about 1 million, were systematically and violently murdered. And in the midst of this killing, in the midst of this genocide, where true to the prophecy, the Hutus would hunt people down with machetes and cut their heads off. They were so worried about what was happening in Rwanda. Bodies were left to bloat in the tropic, you know, that hot tropical sun. Bodies floated down the Niger River. They were worried it was going to pollute Lake Victoria. New York Times, you know, had a headline that said blood in the river. I mean, it looks like hell was unleashed in Rwanda. There was a priest. His name was Father Ubald. He was a Catholic priest who had a Tutsi father that had been murdered earlier in 62 in the overthrow of Rwanda. And he was forced to leave the country when he was young. He returned, became a priest, had a large parish there. When this took place, his family was brutally murdered, immediate and extended family, including his mother. They were exterminated just in the first 2 weeks of this massacre. As I said, thousands of his parishioners lost their lives. This was demonic, plain and simple. It was absolutely demonic. So Father Ubald went to his bishop. His bishop told him to leave the country. And Ubald fled the country. And when the massacre finally ended, he had been praying in a place called Lourdes, France, one of the most incredible healing sites in the world. And Jesus spoke to him. And Jesus told him, pick up your cross. And he was given a healing. Father, I really believe Father Ubald was healed. His heart was filled with forgiveness, and a forgiveness that can only come from God. You know, I don't know how you can do this. If my wife, my children, my mother, my father, my loved ones were brutally murdered, how do you forgive? I mean, you've been through this. Maybe you've been raped. Maybe you've been molested. Maybe somebody killed your child in a drunk driving accident. Maybe you're the victim of a violent crime. How do you forgive? I always, when I see these people can do this, it always moves my heart. I wrote about it in my book on Divine Mercy, how the Green River Killer was forgiven. I talked about how Larry Nassar, the doctor who abused these gymnasts, how the gymnasts forgave him. I talked about how John Paul II did this. It's heroic. Father Ubald belonged in that story, because when the genocide ended, the grief-stricken survivors were left bewildered at the evil in their country. The Lord told him to return to Rwanda and sent him on a mission to preach reconciliation. And that's exactly what Father Ubald did. He went back. He not only forgave the man that murdered his mother and his family, but he adopted his son, took his son on and put him through school. That's heroic virtue. And Ubald was a man that radiated purity. He radiated love. He had God's grace. He preached forgiveness and reconciliation. And quite often, we often need forgiveness. We need to forgive before God heals us. He built a center in Rwanda called the Center of Peace or the Secret of Peace, which was ministering to people in Rwanda and the surrounding areas. And then God gave him this unique charism. He would go to places, and he went to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help many times in Champion, Wisconsin. And I was last time I ever saw him was there in Champion. Very last time I ever laid eyes. Last time I hugged the man was in Champion, right before he contracted COVID. And he would celebrate Mass, and there was nothing sensational. He didn't beat you on the head with his hand and say, "In the name of Jesus, be healed." And you know, it was none of that. He prayed. He had Mass. And then we prayed the rosary, and then he'd go up and down the aisle with the Blessed Sacrament. And with Jesus truly present, the Lord would reveal things to him. He would see somebody's liver or kidney or foot or whatever the ailment was being healed. And the Lord would give him this information. And he would say this. He would say, "Jesus is alive, and he knows your needs, and he wants to heal you." And Jesus has healed many people physically and spiritually and emotionally and mentally. Marriages, relationships, all sorts of things have taken place. And people would claim these healings. In fact, I remember one story of a person who went there. Their cousin was suffering from a very rare cancer. And I think they drove over 100 miles to be with him. After being prayed over at one of these healing services, their cancer vanished completely, totally, unbelievably gone. There was another healing service where he was in St. Louis. The person could not get their diabetes under control. And they went to the healing service and totally cured, totally healed of it as well. I mean, you get these physical healings, you know. There was one woman, and we get this intention during the chapel too. This person was sharing how she was losing her hair. She went and that was healed. And I love those stories because, you know, not everything is cancer. Not everything is a death sentence, right? Something as difficult as a woman losing her hair or a man losing his hair. To find God in his mercy healing that, I just think it's so incredible. People with bloody noses, you know, I mean, simple little things like that, migraines. There's some dramatic ones too, though. I mean, unbelievable. There was a case of a healing service that took place of a child who was born with major defects, brain defects, neurological problems. And the parents went there believing in a miracle. They even named their baby Faith. That's how much they believed that God was going to heal her. And again, we see the fruit of this. Look, you and I pray every single day, don't we, for these type of miracles during the chaplet? And we see them. We see how God can work. Well, I've got good news for you. Father Ubald, even though God has called him home, like St. Faustina, like St. Therese, I think is interceding even more powerfully from the other side of the veil. I often share how Faustina said that she would pull back the veil of heaven so that doubting souls would not distrust the most tender and loving heart of Jesus with their distrust. And she would work for you. She would intercede. She would continue her mission as St. Therese. I think Father Ubald is doing the same thing. There is an event being held tomorrow at a site where the Mother of God appeared in 1859 and where miracles today continue. A place where Father Ubald prayed, felt a special anointing, and where many have come. Club feet were healed, scoliosis. I mean, you can go through the litany of miracles that took place for him. And tomorrow they're going to honor Father Ubald. And I'm joined this afternoon by the communication director from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, Corey Campbell, and she's here with us. She'll fill you in on all the details and tell you what's going on. Corey, this is an extraordinary event. I am so glad that you're going to honor the memory of Father Ubald and have these ceremonies. I know Bishop Ricken's going to be part of this event, too. There's going to be some great speakers. Fill everyone in on what's going on and why you decided to do this.
Well, I think, you know, thank you for having us on, Drew, and thank you also for honoring the legacy and ministry of Father Ubald throughout the years. I know that was brought a lot of people to us and many healings as well, so thank you for that. We decided to honor Father. Father initiated a number of different programs here at the Shrine, including a weekly rosary program and the Eucharistic Healing Prayer Service, which is held on the last Saturday of each month. We decided to continue that in his honor, but Bishop Rickman, the Most Reverend David Elkman, our Bishop of Green Bay, has decided that he really wanted, you know, he was a longtime friend of Father's, a great promoter of the Shrine, and Father Ubald as well within the United States, wanted to have a Mass in memory of Father. He had such a tremendous impact on the Shrine and the people who came here, just personally, not just speaking, you know, an amazing impact. So we wanted to make sure that we honored him properly. So we're holding, I think there have been two memorial masses in the U.S. for him since his passing, and this will be the final one. So we are very honored that we're able to do that in the diocese and, right at the site that he had such a connection when he came here. You know, Father would just fall to his knees in the apparition oratory here and pray when he came here, bringing thousands of people's prayer intentions with him. And he had a special love for this place. So it's just wonderful to be able to feel his presence still here in a different form, you know? So we're really grateful that we're able to do that. So tomorrow's Mass will be, the Memorial Mass will actually be at 11, but prior to that central time, prior to the Mass, we have two speakers, one of whom helped write his last memoir, Freedom Makes You Free. Her name is Heidi Hess Saxton, and she will be, she's with Ave Maria Press. She'll be opening the day with her, sharing her experiences with Father Ubald, which are myriad and very interesting, while writing the book. And then Katie Long, who has started the U.S. Nonprofit organization to carry on the ministry and mission of Father Ubald, will speak at 9:45 a.m., and she will talk about not only what they're doing in terms of, you know, carrying on that message and mission and his preserving his legacy, but also opening the cause for beatification, which they'll be you know, strongly promoting through that the organization they've started. So that will open the day. Bishop Ricken will hold Mass at 11 a.m. And then after that, we will hold at around noon the Eucharistic Healing Prayer Service that Father initiated at the shrine. And we look forward to many people joining us and asking for intercession with Father Ubald on this special day in which we honor him. And I'm hoping there will be many, I believe there will be many healing graces. I've watched them myself here many years, you know, that we've had this sort of intertwined heritage together here at the shrine. So I've watched, I've seen miracles myself, and I've seen our, you know, Our Lady work with him, and him calling through Jesus for many healings and having them happen. So it's been a beautiful thing to watch.
Corey, stay with me. When we come back, I have to take a short pause here. We'll talk a little bit more as well. If you want to join us, maybe you've got a question, a comment, maybe you want to share how you were healed by Father Ubald, love to talk with you. I'll open the phones. The number's 888-914-9149. You can call right now. I'll share another miracle, too, that took place through Father Ubald coming up. So stay with it. You'll love that story. God's present. He's alive, and he works. Father Ubald was an example of that. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your life connected. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Hey, getting you plugged into something that if you have the opportunity to get to Green Bay, Wisconsin, I don't know if you can drive there. There's a tremendous event taking place on Saturday in honor of Father Ubald. If you can, and I get that, and you might be listening in California or Houston, Texas, or, you know, Miami, Florida, who knows, Alaska, Japan, wherever you're tuned in, right? We can certainly join in spirit. There is no limit when it comes to God. And we're going to pray the chaplet coming up here in about probably about 10 minutes or so. So we'll ask God for a real miracle for you as well. But let me share with you a quick miracle that always blew me away. I loved Father Ubald very much. Tomorrow they're going to honor him. They're going to have this healing service with Bishop David Ricken, the bishop who approved the apparitions and who himself, I think, has special charisms and gifts. I'm proud to call him my bishop. I remember praying with Father Ubald one time. I drove him from the shrine of Our Lady of Good Help down to Chicago where he had to meet somebody. And we spent the 3 hours in constant prayer. We prayed the rosary. It took us, I don't know, 3.5 hours to do all those rosaries together. And his prayer was so deep. But he communed with God. And I know God can work miracles. I share that with you every day. And it's really maybe one of my missions to let you know that that can happen. God works in our lives. He works through individuals. He works through priests. And he worked through Father Ubald. I learned about a young girl who had just had a tremendous healing. I think her name was Dulce, if I remember right. She was 8 years old. She was born with spina bifida. And if you're familiar with spina bifida, you know how serious that is. Her feet were what is commonly known as clubbed, right? They had club feet. She couldn't walk without special braces. Her kidneys were two different sizes. She had a defective bladder. She needed to be relieved through a catheter every 3 hours. She suffered all sorts of aches and pains, this poor little girl, right? So her mother had taken her to the healing masses over the years, but she said when she went to this one, Father Ubald, it was very different. The day before the mass, her sister told her about it, and she said, I don't really want to go, but her sister went. She brought back a handful of mustard seeds and gave her one, and she said to her, don't give up faith. You know, remember, faith the size of a mustard seed can move mountains, right? See what happens. So the next day, they went to this mass, and then Dulce was having a lot of pain in her mouth and her gums. This little girl was a little victim soul. She was suffering constantly. So during the time Father Ubald was relaying the healings, all of a sudden, the girl got really sick. She felt really sick. So she asked her mother to take her to the bathroom. When they were in the bathroom, like I said, God's not limited. You don't have to be right in front of Father Ubald for this healing. When this girl was in the bathroom, her left leg, her leg and her foot, she had club feet, began to straighten out. She all of a sudden said, Mom, I feel better. Her mouth, every pain in her body just vanished. It was completely gone. Suddenly, she began smiling and feeling better. And she didn't need to walk. I mean, she didn't need the braces to walk. You know, she needs those. And she had a hip brace. She had leg braces, or otherwise she'd fall. She walked out of that bathroom. She went straight up that aisle. She was staring at her feet. She was in awe. The audience, those presents there praying, were stunned. She walked perfectly. And she looked at her mother, and the little girl said, "God helped me. God helped me." Well, here's the kicker. There was a surgery planned for a couple of weeks later, I think it was, and the doctors were going to break and straighten her leg out. That had been canceled, and her doctor's appointment scheduled for her kidneys, for the mass, and all the tests came back normal. This girl was completely 100% healed, and that's what God can do. Yeah, spina bifida, club feet, tumors on your kidneys, wrong size this, blockages here, whatever, inoperable tumors. Not with God. With God, all things are possible. And I think we have a great saint like Father Ubald, a man whose cause I know is now moving forward, who really helped people understand that, to see that. He made visible the invisible. And there's going to be a very powerful mass this coming Saturday. If you want to be part of it, you can get information by going to the website for Our Lady of Good Help. In fact, I'm joined by Corey Campbell. She's the communication director there. And Corey, if people want to get plugged in and be part of this event, how do they do that?
They can also, if they're not able to make it on site, they can follow us on through our website at www.championshrine.org, and we will be streaming the Mass at 11 a.m. Central Time. Right, all they have to do is click on our site, and it has a live streaming Mass. We will be streaming that Mass at 11 o'clock, and we hope that people will join us spiritually in their own way and pray. But that will also be on our YouTube channel, so we'll be having, you know, they'll be able to watch that at a later time if they can't now. But also on our Facebook page, so we'll be broadcasting it live there as well. So
now you said you witnessed
www.championshrine.org.
Corey, you were telling me you also witnessed a healing similar to that one. What did you see happen?
Oh, I couldn't sleep for 2 days after. I remember this is like my second year here, I think, and it was in the old, you know, the historic chapel, and sure. It was myself and Dan Drossert, who is a docent here, whose uncle had this miraculous healing, and he and I helped a gentleman who could not walk. I mean, literally, he could hardly, you know, he could barely walk at all, and we helped seat him. So I helped Dan, and he took one side, I took the other. Man sat down in the back of the chapel. And I was in the sacristy when I was greeting, you know, Father coming in, and he was getting ready. So I stayed back there, and I heard this tremendous commotion after he said, "Jesus has healed you." Wow. And he had said something about like a gait or some strange, you know, something to do with the legs. And the man got up and ran to the altar and fell to his knees and got up, and he's been able to walk since. And I can remember Dan and I. Well, the first thing that you do in those kind of situations is you're so awestruck by the power of God to heal. And I think you have experiences too around Father Ubald. Yeah. He had this, he was like a symbol, walking symbol of hope, a walking symbol of hope. Yeah. And always reminding people that Jesus can heal, and especially through through the sacrament of reconciliation, to forgive, to have a symbol of someone being able to forgive the killer of his mother, and then gaining this amazing charism after. It was just a beautiful gift for all of us who were able to watch it, but also experience it. You know, I think that we all can be symbols of hope in that way. So I think, you know, that's our mission going forward. I know he'd want me to say that, that
well
Jesus
said.
Heals. I want to leave with that message. Jesus heals, and he is alive, and that we can all be, you know, carry that hope within us that anything is possible. I'm glad you brought the mustard seed story up. I think that's beautiful because it's so symbolic of everything that he stood for. So,
well, let me do this.
Thank
we'll
you
grab a call.
For doing that.
We'll grab a call or two before we run out of time here. Sue is listening in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Sue, thanks for joining us. Go right ahead.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I just have so many stories about Father Ubald, but I know we're short on time. Long story short, I got to know Father coming to the healing masses in Chicago through my dear friend Monique. And I've been praying for my daughter for a long time. She was diagnosed with a severe form of ulcerative colitis that left her debilitated. And I went to a healing mass the very first time he came to Lamont, Illinois. And I was just praying from my heart before I wanted to take my daughter to herself. And the Lord spoke to my heart, and he said, before I heal your daughter, you must forgive. And I was the type of person that held resentment and just held on to grudges. But I prayed, I fasted, I thought I was a good Christian, but I just would hold grudges. And so it dawned on me through all these healing masses that no matter how hard I pray, if I'm holding grudges and I'm upset with people, there's no room for the Lord to act. There's no space in my heart to receive that healing gift. So as a result of the grace of forgiveness that the Lord gave me, my daughter was healed at another healing mass with Father Ubald, and he announced her condition. And then at another healing mass, my husband had a lump in his neck that they had suspected for cancer. And my husband never came to a healing mass, and he would chuckle when I would tell him of all these healings happening. I don't know if he believed or not, but the day of his biopsy, there was nothing in his neck. So it had disappeared on the day of his biopsy. So there were so many healings. But my message is you have to forgive others who hurt you, and you have to ask for forgiveness in order for the healing to come, because otherwise there's no room for our Lord to work. There really isn't.
Such a great message to leave us on. Sue, thank you very much for
thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Corey, hopefully I'll be able to join you tomorrow. Please pray for me too there. And again, if you are listening somewhere in the country, join on the live stream and all the information there at Our Lady of Good Help. Hey, Corey, we'll catch up soon. We're going to pray now, okay? So we'll pray
for
you.
Thank you, Drew. Yes.
You got it.
Thank you.
That's Corey Campbell. Let's pray the chaplet when I return. I also have an answered prayer I want to share with you, too. I'll do that after the chaplet, but we'll pray now.